10 past 8. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next. Support for WGTD's Morning Show comes from Jack Andrea, Kenosha's hometown store since 1911. They may be closed, but they have not lost their hometown spirit. You can visit jackandrea.com to shop their exclusive hometown collection, including Kenosha t-shirts, sweatshirts, and mugs. Visit jackandrea.com today. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am really delighted to have the opportunity today to talk about one of the most important things to me and to my life, and important to many of you, I'm sure, as well, singing. And I am speaking today with one of the country's most highly regarded voice teachers. And beyond that, also someone who is a very important figure within the single most significant organization of voice teachers in the world. Karen Brunson is a professor of music at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, and co-chair of music performance there. She, like me, is a graduate of Luther College, and so we share that in common. And she is currently president of NATS, and NATS stands for the National Association of Teachers of Singing. And so this is an organization that combines over 1,000 voice teachers from the United States and Canada and points farther afield. And NATS does all kinds of things to support the work of voice teachers and young aspiring singers, young aspiring teachers. And COVID-19, as it turns out, is having drastic effect on the whole performance art world, singers and instrumentalists alike, and certainly people in higher academia. In fact, all levels of education also find their lives and their work deeply impacted by COVID-19. And one of the things we're going to talk about today are some of the specifics about how COVID-19 has affected this part of our world and our culture in light of an important webinar that NATS co-sponsored with several other important organizations to help us understand what kind of singing is safe within the era of COVID-19. We'll get to that a little bit later. There's all kinds of other things to talk about as well. So, Karen Brunson, we welcome you to the Morning Show.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
I'm so happy that we can have this conversation. Ahead of us getting into the COVID-19 stuff, I think it would be interesting to hear from you, Madam President, about this organization, which you have been president of for the last couple of years, but soon to step down, I think, right?
I become past president at the end of our virtual national conference. It was moved to virtual from, it was going to be in Knoxville, but now it's going to be virtual. And that's going to be June 24 through June 30th, and it's shaping up to be really exciting. And yes, that is at the end of that, I become past president, and I have duties as past president also. So the overall function as in the president situation is, it's a six-year commitment. Mm-hmm. So you're president-elect for 2 years, then you're president for 2 years, and then you're past president for 2 years. And you are busy the entire time.
And of course, you had no way of knowing when you agreed to this that you would end up being president of NATS during such a critically important time. I think I was relatively thorough in my introduction to what the organization of NATS is really all about, but you're in a much better position than I am to speak about its kind of far-reaching effects and also a little bit about the kind of things that you have done as its president.
It's been one of the most privileged things that any person gets to do is to be a president of something you believe right to the core of your being, to the core of your spirit. And to be with, our membership is 7,000 people around, but we have about 15,000 students who audition every year for NATS. And that goes back to when I was at Luther and I went to NATS. I can remember getting on the bus in Decorah and going all the way to Iowa City for the regional conference and or the chapter conference and auditioning. And I took first place my sophomore year and my junior year. And I took second place my senior year. And so, that just lives in you forever. And then I just started teaching voice and gradually ended up being the president of the chapter level in Chicago. And it's so much fun to see how you can, from an organizational standpoint, embed singing in teachers and in students and in, and when I say students, I'm not just talking about kids. I mean, I'm talking about, we have, everybody is involved in NATS nowadays. It's from, there are people teaching special classes from the time they're a few months old to all the way through older people. And every level, you know, there's more reasons to sing than just to have a career. It's a big fulfillment in your life. So NATS really has come of age right now. And we actually, one of my goals as president was to come up with a strategic plan. Now, I didn't know that was my goal. I knew that I thought we should have fundraising and that we should have a deeper strength and a vision of what we're going to do going forward. And it turned into this huge thousands of hours and hundreds of meetings and hundreds of people involved in drawing up a strategic plan. And that was approved in February by the NATS National Board. And so now, actually tonight, we're going to be having a meeting online with about 200 people to roll out the strategic plan. We're calling it Framing Our Future. And we have a vision statement, transforming lives through the power of singing. We changed our mission statement to advance excellence in singing through teaching, performance, scholarship, and research. And our values are to provide support and committed leadership for our mission and vision and advance ethical principles and celebrate all of those who do this and encourage individuals. And what I'm really pleased about too is that we have our first ever NATS diversity and inclusion statement. And this is being vetted by our advocacy committee, which is a new committee that started 2 years ago. And we want it to reach all corners of our membership and represent who we are in the 21st century. And so that means that we're reaching people who are doing this avocationally. People are doing it for education, just in general for people. People who are pursuing careers and in all the different genres. NATS long ago was classical. We taught classical music and that was it. That doesn't mean that was all that was going on. That doesn't mean that a lot of teachers weren't doing other things, but now we're just owning it. And we're also, we have such excellence among our members that we can really share all that we do and all the ways that we do it. And actually, with this whole thing of going to Zoom, it has just catapulted what the influence can be, not just for NATS. Definitely NATS is resounding around the world right now. But we can really get to the depth of what we need to know in the state of the art. Research, voice science, what's out there. You oversee the recordings, reviewing the recordings for the Journal of Singing, which is our our journal. There are workshops, conferences, there's mentoring initiatives. Our NATS chats are really popular now, and that's Kari Reagan who hosts those. We are looking internationally now, and a lot more than previous. And we also partner with a lot of our sister organizations, which is amazing how many there are, and that it really is reaching around the world, literally. So
it's an exhausting list. I'm exhausted just listening to it, and I'm sure you're exhausted just listening it, and let alone the sort of the doing of it and to kind of oversee all this. I know that one of the things that makes it all workable is that you are also affiliated with regional governors and others who help to kind of facilitate all of this, as well as a national office and some really, really capable people who assist in all of this. And yet, I'm sure you bear certain responsibilities that are really your own, and I'm sure they weigh heavily. Will it be with some sense of relief that you will shift from president to past president a few weeks from now?
I don't know if it's relief. I think it's a good system. You know, I think you give your all for that time, you know, and we currently, the past president, Linda Snyder, the president-elect, Carol Blankenship, and the next president-elect, Diana Allen, we get together and we have little presidential meetings about things. And so we have never had such good onboarding all the way across the organization. Looking at region governors, there are some incoming region governors. They will come to our board meeting, which is just before the conference in June. And we are encouraging at the chapter level too, that when there's incoming talent coming onto the board, that they onboard them sooner. And to that, and our officers too, we have four new vice presidents coming in. And so they've been coming to some meetings that we've been having online, and they're not going to come in like total novices, not understanding what's going on at all. And yeah, and tonight, our meeting that we're having tonight, that is going to be chapter presidents, people from their boards, region governors, people from their boards, and committees. Our committees are amazing. And they and their board members, their committee members are encouraged to come too. Past presidents are going to be there, the current board. Tonight is going to be amazing because it's the first time we've ever had a leadership committee meeting like this. And the purpose of it is then to send forward the framing of our future strategic plan and encourage them to embed it within what they do and to see the value of that too. That really matters. And seed that out onto their members. We just thought this is a good way to start.
Absolutely. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Karen Brunson. She is a professor of music at Northwestern University, a voice teacher there for many years, a very busy professional singer as well. And she is nearing the end of her term as president of NATS, the National Association of Teachers of Singing, with thousands of members around the world. And every summer, a good 1,000 or maybe more voice teachers from across the country and occasionally from other countries as well gather together for a memorable national conference. And this year, because of COVID-19, instead of occurring in beautiful Knoxville, Tennessee, it will be an online virtual convention, but will be exciting in just some different ways. So Karen Brunson, one of the most immediate reasons I wanted to have you on the morning show and was because of a very specific topic that I think will be of interest to actually all of our listeners, whether or not they happen to be singers. And that is the fact that one of the largely unanticipated consequences of the COVID-19 crisis is that not only has it forced the shutdown of virtually every performing arts organization in terms of their performances, along with, of course, sporting events and so on, but it has also called into question the safety of just the act of singing itself, at least when one is singing in a group with others, whether in a choir or in a congregation or whatever. I'm curious, first of all, At what point in all of this did you first become aware of this? That not only can we not have choir rehearsal because we can't be together, but that even if somehow we could be together, I'm not sure we can safely sing together. When did that first become apparent to you, or when did you first become aware of that?
Well, I think a lot of us found out, you know, like everybody does, through the news, and that it was getting worse and worse. And then we heard about the choir in Washington State, where about 45 members of the choir were had symptoms of it or had COVID, and two of those died too. And that was interesting. Nats right away sprang into action and started having our, we have Nats chats, which are just webinars and people can sign on to go to those. And we knew that people were very concerned when they heard about, like, holy smokes, where people singing have aerosols. We started hearing about the different kinds of, that people can get COVID by just breathing the air. And we all started wearing masks and doing what we could. And the masks help with the larger droplets. And then we started seeing the science about how the aerosol stays in the air. We started hearing from Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx. You know, it's really just the same as everybody. Our antenna is up a little bit more when we saw that it was related to singing. And our schools, then some of them closed, and we couldn't, all of a sudden we couldn't be together to do what we love to do, which is teach singing or to go to rehearsals, and everything started shutting down. And we realized that we needed to talk about it. And so the Nats chats provided some of that. And all of a sudden we were going to online lessons, whether you're an independent teacher or whether you're teaching at an institution. And so how do we do that? How do we help our members make this work? And so we did have a number of emergency, well, special edition Nats chats. We did one on how do you teach, all of a sudden you have to start teaching diction online. All of a sudden you have to start teaching vocal pedagogy online. Also, then you start realizing that this is hard. And so your mental health has is an issue. How do pianists, how do collaborative pianists work online and coach it with their singers or play for them? And then how about our singers themselves? How's their mental health? And what are some tools for our own self-care and managing our own stress? So we did go forward with that, but the biggie, should I can go to the biggie, was that we I did a thing with the National Choral Collegiate Choral Organization, and Tim Sharp, who is the executive director of ACDA, the American Choral Directors Association, was on that also, as was Catherine Dehoney, who is the president and CEO of Chorus America. And so we were all talking about things on that webinar, and afterwards, well, we did learn during it that actually Tim Sharp had COVID. And his wife had it also. And so they were recovering from it at that point. And so he was very serious and very seriously concerned about, you know, I can't go to a rehearsal and spread this. I could, you know, I need to isolate. And they were. And so decided that there should be something more official. And so it was just good hearts. This is one thing that we really have done a lot of with Nats, is reaching out to our sister organizations around the world, literally. The International Federation for Choral Music, that's IFCM, with ACDA, with Chorus America, with EVTA, which is the European Voice Teachers Association, and all their particular, the BDG is the German Voice Association in Italy, and I think they have 34 different countries represented there. And some of those countries, the Freiburg Institute issued a statement, and they're out of Germany. But we're seeing all of these tidbits come out, and so it was really an incredible thing that we put together with the American Choral Directors Association, with Chorus America, with Marty Munson and the Barbershop Harmony Society, and with PAMA, I think that's the Performing Arts Medical Association, and that was Dr. Lucinda Halsted. And we brought in an expert from the University of Maryland, Dr. Donald Milton. And they had a two-hour webinar that turned into 2.5 hours. And we opened it. Nats facilitated that through our, I think it was Zoom we used. And we allowed for 5,000 people to come to that. And so you had to register in advance, and it was within a day and a half, it was full. Mm-hmm. And emails were some mad emails, but mostly understanding, you know, and that this would be recorded. So I don't know that we could see ahead of ourselves what would be happening with this, but it really echoed around the world. And the expertise that was there basically said that singers are like sports people or people who do something really energetic. We are super spreaders is what the activity itself is, a super spreader. We are not personally super spreaders, but and then we started seeing the different choral situations that had resulted in the spreading of the disease. We're still not sure exactly why that all happens. And there is research out there and experts out there that are talking about that. The Emory Voice Institute, I think it's Institute, has a real short video that just says, right now it's not safe to be in a choir and sing, you know, close together. So then people want to know, even I was not on this particular webinar, but I was behind the scenes watching all of the chat and the questions, and they just want to know, when can we do this and how can we do this? Mm-hmm. And how much does that cost to make that happen? And how much, you know, and the answer is not that simple. We aren't coming at this as if we're experts. We were just there to host the meeting. At this point, there's almost 98,000 people who have watched this webinar.
Wow.
So we just had no idea. And we have seen Choral Canada had to cancel their Podium 2020, which is their conference that they have every other year. And even they on some of their radio stations have had, they're a real singing country. Mm. And Canadians are members of NATS. And so around the world, it is a question. There's about 54 million people in the United States who sing in choirs. And wow. I know Canada has about 30,000 choirs. That's not the members, that's just the choirs in Canada. So wow. This is a huge issue. And it, you know, how are the schools supposed to handle this? K through 12, you know, how are they? How are the universities to handle this? How are community choirs, professional choirs, amateur choirs, church choirs, congregational singing? Anywhere there is something going on having to do with singing, it's a continuous flow of the aerosols going in the air. So what we understand, and I am not an expert, what we understand is droplets are bigger particles, and they go out and down, basically more, but aerosols can hover in spaces for, you know, up to 3 hours. And so if you have a lot of those aerosols in a close proximity and in a room that doesn't have a lot of ventilation, then it's a problem, maybe. So we are just trying to be as cautious as we can. And I know I get to teach voice online. And so that's one-on-one. And I've actually seen that kind of work pretty well. I've got my singers that I'm working with. I've become a different teacher through a different medium, through a different platform. And I am seeing my students improve and trying to keep them motivated when they don't have all their friends right with them. They're at home. I'll see the dog walk, their family dog, and I'll see the mom and dad might stop by and say hi. And there's something kind of cool about that too. So it's a different world right now. We've never had this before.
Right. And so we're all just kind of grappling, trying to figure out how to do this, how to be safe. Let's stay with the kind of the the community singing question for just a couple of other things. So I think one of the points that is raised is that we hear a lot about those big droplets, but then there are these much smaller droplets called aerosols, mm-hmm. and the fact that they're smaller is a problem because, for one thing, they linger in the air; they don't drop to the ground so fast. They linger; they can get into things in a sense more easily, and the evidence is that they also carry this COVID-19 virus, and so it, in a sense, lengthens the list of activities that are risky, and one of them is singing. I think one of the points that maybe you can kind of clarify for our listeners is that when we're talking about singing, in a sense, it's not just what you do with your mouth and throat when you sing in terms of sending stuff out, but it's also the act of singing also makes you a very susceptible receptor to what is in there. That same openness that sends out the sound also allows stuff we don't want to enter the body. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, we take very, I mean, that's, you're a voice teacher too. You know that you don't take a shallow breath, you take a deep breath, like much deeper than typically. You know, even our voices when we talk, we're louder talkers. And that means we probably took a bigger breath in and then a more force out. I think I read that when you sneeze, the particles go about 200 miles per hour.
Wow.
And when you cough, it's about 50 miles per hour. And singing is not that kind of force moving out. You know, but you don't think of the inhalation part of it too, what you're inhaling and how it goes, evidently the COVID virus goes all the way deep into the lungs and to the alveoli that are at the little ends of the bronchioles. And that's a big problem. So, it's worse for older people than it is for younger people. So it's, yeah. And we know, a Luther grad, Dr. Michael Osterholm,
yes,
has been real important in all of this. So I've been listening to all of his updates and facts about it. And I heard him in a webinar with the Minneapolis ELCA talking to their bishop up there. And it was about 35 minutes of just hearing, here's how it is. And he sort of says it how it is too. And, you know, that's what we're living in right now.
Yeah. And it sounds like, I mean, when I first heard some of this, my initial reaction was, well, yes, I understand how when someone is singing Brunhilde's battle cry from Die Walküre, I can understand how, yes, you're sending out millions of aerosols and so on, and I could see how that would be. But how about some quiet little dentist sitting in a church pew singing almost more to himself than, you know, into the room in the way that you and I probably sing in church? Isn't that a very different thing? And it sounds like the more we hear, the more it sounds like just about any kind of singing, even very quiet, untrained singing by an ordinary person, that also carries a certain level of risk.
Well, and the fact that you're in a community of people too, that's a problem. Just talking is an issue. You know, so if, when they talk about, well, where could you do something safely, and I heard somebody mention, one of the experts talk, that maybe outside and maybe far apart. And they're saying, you know, the 6 feet isn't enough for singing. Probably you need to go to at least double that, if not more. So maybe far apart outside, you could sing and do some harmony together, you know. And then somebody talked about, well, their choir, if you did that, it would take a football field, you know, to get them far enough apart all the way around, have, you know, 13 feet around you or so. And when you're there also, even if you're a soft singer, somebody else isn't, and you're breathing in the air that's there. I mean, we always have, you know, and this is how we've always gotten flu, but this is a particularly tough, COVID-19 is tough to deal with physically.
Right. Is it your understanding that choral directors are in pretty much solid accord about this, that choirs should not be rehearsing together and performing together right now? Or out there, is there some difference of opinion that you're aware of?
I'm pretty much aware of the people who are being careful. Every once in a while, you see some rogue situation where somebody's doing what they want. I am not hearing about that. I am hearing about people being cautious and responsible and careful until there's a real go-ahead. But, you know, we have, I know you have this too. We want to know how we're going to start school in the fall. You know, but for us, we at Northwestern doesn't start until the end of September. Mm. So really, we're 4 months away. And really, we've been dealing with this COVID-19 only, what, have we been 3 months now? Maybe not even that. And we don't know how things are going to be down the road. But in that time, methods electronically have already improved. We know that Zoom came out with 5.0, and so you're all supposed to do that now. And I know that Ian Howell is one of our NATS member who is researching, you know, could you have lose the delay in lessons by, is there some way to do that so that there is no delay? And he's coming up with ideas. Are there microphones that would be better that are there? And I know in the choral world too, they're coming up with different platforms to, you know, record music together. And how could there be a community feel for that? Is, I know people are thinking about those things. So we don't have answers, but we do have questions. Hmm. And there are people who have enough cleverness that they're trying to figure out ideas to help all of us.
That's encouraging. So
it is encouraging.
And it sounds like, and a lot has already happened. In fact, I think that was one of the points made at one point in the NATS webinar, is that it's incredible how much has been developed, how much understanding has come into being in a very short amount of time, and that innovation hasn't gone away. If anything, it has stepped up in urgency, and along with trying to find a vaccine and better treatments and so on, there is also all of this innovation at play in terms of kind of figuring all of this out for everybody.
Well, and I figure there's always a silver lining. This is a really tough situation. But you can either lose faith or you can be part of solutions. And I'm not going to lose faith. I've gained faith. You know, I've needed to. We need to care right now. And nobody's going to do better, you know, even staying at home and not seeing people very much. There's ways to do it. My 92-year-old mother had her birthday in April, and she figured out how to do Zoom, and we had a birthday party through Zoom. You know, so this is, come on, if my 92-year-old mom can do this, we can, at all ages and all levels, make progress. And probably there will be new practices. For instance, we're having our first virtual board meeting for NATS coming up in June 18th it starts, and our meeting tonight is through Zoom. There's some huge connectivity wins in all of this.
It reminds me that something I read recently took issue, and I've seen this in more than one place, but took real serious issue with the terminology of social distancing, which is what almost always is what it's talked about. And this particular document said it's not social distancing we need. We need physical distancing. We need to be physically apart from each other, but socially, we need to be as connected as we ever were, and we need to find ways to remain connected. And indeed, some of these connections that we are fostering during COVID-19 are probably making us better connected, or connected with certain people that we had scarcely any connection with at all once upon a time. I mean, it really is a silver lining that we need to acknowledge and foster.
Yeah, and Zoom or whatever the medium is, you're using Microsoft Teams or Facebook or FaceTime or whatever, it has to be more organized. You know, you can't talk over each other. So we are having, and we're meeting with my husband's brothers and their wives once every other week or so. And we all had to learn in that not to talk over the other person because you can't hear, you know. That's actually good. And we, the Nats, in Nats, our budget meetings, we did those virtually. It saved a lot of time, it saved a lot of money, and the organization will benefit from that cost savings. And we did it in about half the time because we had to, you know, and we had to be organized and we had to be there on time and we had to have our documents up and ready to show each other. And, you know, there is a lot of good in this, and it's going to resound going forward, I'm sure, in our teaching too. And there are many teachers in Nats who already were teaching online. And thank goodness, because they have been generous and shared their expertise with all of us who never, ever had.
Right. I am reminded of a very sweet situation that's probably at least 10 years ago, maybe longer ago than that. I wish I'd written down the year. But one of our voice teachers at Carthage, who's now lives and teaches in Prague, a retired opera singer. But Nancy Henninger was her name, and I still remember the day towards the very end of the school year when I walked past her office, and there she was with her laptop, and it was a young woman, I believe, in Prague, actually, and who had a big audition there, and Nancy was leading her through vocalizing and a last run-through of the arias that were going to be part of this very important audition, and here was Nancy, older than I am, doing all of this with great alacrity, with great efficiency, and it was like the space age as far as I'd never heard of such a thing, and here it was. And not only that, I mean, not just teaching somebody who lives down in McHenry, Illinois, but teaching someone who lives in Prague, and now here we are suddenly, all these years later, all of us having to, in effect, do the same thing and to learn how to do this very, very quickly.
Well, and I can remember my own attitude when people were saying, do you do online lessons? I was like, no, I only do live lessons. Well, I'm wrong, you know, I'm just wrong. And I mean, some
you
of my
were
kids
wrong.
Are doing, I was wrong, now I'm right. But you know, when we first had to come at this whole thing, I basically was on the evolution of where I am now happened in like 6 short weeks. Because I had to figure out how to get to Zoom, how to make it work, that my Wi-Fi was not good enough. And so I had to get the X-Fi pods or something like that to, you know, make it stronger. And I had to get a better microphone. And I tried headphones and it just sounded like wow, wow, wow. Then to learn on Zoom how to turn on the original sound. And it was a 250% learning curve. It was not easy. And I needed a piano keyboard, but then my Wi-Fi didn't work if I was at a keyboard. So I needed to be on Ethernet rather than relying on Wi-Fi. It was hard and a lot of panicking because I thought, oh, I'm doing it wrong. And oh, they're not coming onto the lesson. Oh my gosh. So it was hard.
Right. I've always regarded myself as a rather old-fashioned voice teacher, so maybe something like you used to be, at least. And so I thought this was going to be a pretty miserable situation. I was very scared of it and not particularly optimistic, and I've been actually very pleasantly surprised at what a rich experience it's been. And for me, as someone who plays the piano extensively and plays all of the accompaniments for all of my students all of the time, I'm used to playing for them as they sing. And one of the problems is I don't have the music in front of me to like write in or to make notes about, oh, that vowel was wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
That note was wrong. And we get done and I try to remember everything I notice while I'm playing, but I just can't remember it all. And now, because obviously I can't play for the student, they have to, I record an accompaniment for them to which they sing, but I'm just sitting here with the piece of music and my pencil and I'm writing down everything I'm hearing that I think needs to be different. And I've never had that experience before ever as a voice teacher. And it was just eye-opening that it allows this level of detail that has not been possible before. So the one loss results in this very substantial gain that I'm gonna try to hold on to even when we go back to life is as normal.
Well, and even though I had pianists come to their lessons at Northwestern, I would just stop them, you know, just in the middle of it, go, do it again. That doesn't work. Not in this. You got to let them sing it and then go back and say that. And it's again, it's a more organized kind of communication.
Right. I find too, and I'm curious if you would agree, that because I am not in the room with a voice student, to some extent, I have to use my own imagination in
yes.
terms of, for instance, exactly what their timbre is and that high note. Is that really strident?
Yes.
Or
yeah.
is it just kind of strident over my little computer speaker? And I end up looking at the shape of their mouth and what it sounded like going there to, you know, sort of ascertain. And in a sense, you can't be a lazy or casual listener to your student. You have to be listening in a more intense way, it seems to me.
I've found that the things I can hear better than ever are the vowel and the pitch and the vibrato rate. Those are really evident. There's just no denying it. And I realize listening, and I can compare that to listening to professional recordings where the vibrato is constant and it's beautiful. But what we miss out are some of those really, really, really high overtones. You know, it's, you know, some of them cut out at 7,000 hertz or 8,000 hertz, and there's a little noise up above there. And there's again where Ian Howell did this research where he had Leontine Price and he would play her, and then he would go onto his spectrogram or whatever he had, and he would take out some of the highest overtones, and it didn't sound like Leontine anymore. You know, and so those are the things that you're talking about that we have to imagine because we do know their voices. But going forward, if the fall starts and we are still in this using online lessons, I won't know some of those new students, you know, live other than what I can remember from their audition. So it's going to be interesting. But I still think it can work really, really, really well.
Right. We're speaking with Karen Brunson, the president of NATS, the National Association of Teachers of Singing, a professor of music at Evanston Northwestern University, and talking about whether or not we can safely sing during COVID-19. We can safely sing in a room by ourselves, maybe with our spouse, but in terms of singing in groups, it's something that is regarded right now as a high-risk activity, which is why, at least for the moment, it must be approached with extreme caution. And of course, church musicians and school musicians across the country and professional musicians certainly are directly impacted by this. Karen Brunson, in the last couple of minutes we have, I think it would be fun to just get a capsule summary of your lifetime of singing. I don't remember where you are from originally, but I suspect that wherever your home was, where you grew up, singing was a huge part of it from a very early age.
I was loud from the get-go, and I always loved to sing. My mother remembers when I was a year and a half, she could hear me singing Jesus Loves Me This I Know in tune, but not with the words so well. And that's, so I've always enjoyed that. Started playing ukulele at one point and singing along, and went to guitar a little bit, and had piano lessons when I was young, and the teacher asked that I quit because I didn't really have the attention span. And so I came back to it later and took some organ lessons and became our church organist and played cello. So, you know, mine was a delightful upbringing. And Alan Kepke, who was a great composer, he was my high school choral director, and he went to Luther. And then I went to Luther and did music there. And I had no aspirations to do anything, really, just to enjoy life and sing, and it just has gone real well. I didn't do things the way you should. My terminal degree is a BA from Luther College. I did go to Yale for one semester and just decided not to continue, and came home. I got married to the man I loved, and at the age of 23, and he's a high school choral director, retired for 11 years now. And he went to Luther also. So I just wanted to sing in choirs and be happy. And I certainly have. And I certainly have sung in choirs. And we have one son, Carl. He's 37 now. And he's got a beautiful voice. His dog even sang for a long time. so It's for me, it's a very organic thing. I did it my way. And I had a nice solo career too, lots of oratorio and concert and a little bit of opera. And I've always loved teaching more than anything, and taught from the time I was, even in high school, I was doing some teaching. And it just, I think it's been just a natural occurrence in my life.
And of course, there's nothing that says that someone who is a great singer and loves to sing is going to be a great and happy and fulfilled teacher. They're related, but they're two different things. But
right.
But evidently, you are someone who was born not only to be a singer, but also to be a teacher of singing. And it's great that you've had so many opportunities to explore that.
I'm so fortunate. And as president of NATS, to see the global vision and future of singing, it is strong and moving forward, and it's a good world.
Hmm. A parting word, just because of the seriousness of the topic, your parting words of advice for anybody who is the director of a church choir or the director of any kind of group of singers, what is your advice for them right now regarding COVID-19 and this reality in which we're living?
Stay informed and up to date. Be patient. Don't rush things. Let's put our health first and everybody else's health that we're going to be around. And keep singing. Keep music alive in other ways that you can. And we'll see how everything goes in the next, I would say, year. And hope for the very, very best. Always hope.
Karen Brunson, the president of NATS, the National Association of Teachers of Singing, and a professor of music at Northwestern University in Evanston. Karen Brunson, it's been absolutely wonderful to connect with you in this way, and I appreciate your words of wisdom and your words of hope, and wish you and all of your colleagues only the very, very best as we go forward. And I thank you again for being part of the morning show today.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Tomorrow on the morning show, I'm hoping to bring to you an interview I am scheduled to record later this morning with Dr. George Archibald, who is the co-founder of the International Crane Foundation, located in Baraboo, Wisconsin. They have done amazing work since the early 1970s to help preserve endangered whooping cranes both here and around the world. And not just whooping cranes, but more than a dozen different species of cranes. And I am excited to speak with him. And on Friday, out of the archives, an interview I recorded some years ago with David France, author of How to Survive a Plague, the Inside Story of How Citizens and Science Tamed AIDS. This is one of several interviews from the archives that I have pulled out during COVID-19 to help us explore some of our own history in terms of the ways in which we have managed to confront serious public health crises, comparable at least in some ways to what we are facing right now with COVID-19. Again, David France, How to Survive a Plague, the Inside Story of How Citizens and Science Tamed AIDS. And in the podcast version of the morning show on Saturday, I'm planning to share an interview that goes all the way back to 1996, when the theater department at Carthage presented a play about the AIDS epidemic called The Normal Heart. And we hear from a couple of different people involved in that, including Neil Sharnick, just a freshman at Carthage at the time. Neil is now a member of the theater faculty at Carthage. To subscribe to The Morning Show as a podcast, in which you can hear the program 7 days a week, you should look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. Make sure you search under that title. The podcast is available from all of the major podcast providers, including Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and Spotify. Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from Jack and Drea, Kenosha's hometown store since 1911. They may be closed, but they have not lost their hometown spirit. Visit jackandrea.com to shop their exclusive hometown collection, including Kenosha t-shirts, sweatshirts, and mugs.